1960, Harper Lee published the novel To Kill a Mockingbird. Since then, it's become a classic of modern American literature, selling over 15 million copies. In fact, it's hard to think of a book that's more widely read in American public education. If you walk up to your average American on the street, the odds are pretty good that they know about To Kill a Mockingbird. Mockingbird is set in the 1930s in a small fictional southern town called Macomb, Alabama. One of the central events of the novel concerns an African-American character named Tom Robinson, who's falsely accused of raping a white woman. It's clear that the town's racist majority plans to convict Tom whether he's innocent or not. For that reason, a white lawyer in town, Atticus Finch, agrees to defend Tom. Atticus puts on a brilliant defense, essentially proving that Tom is completely innocent. Tom is eventually convicted anyway, but despite that tragic ending, readers and critics have taken the book to be a scathing condemnation of racism and a model for racial justice. Atticus is an American hero. Or is he? All this was called into question with the recent publication of a second novel by Harper Lee called Go Set a Watchman. The novel is set in the mid-1950s, and in it, Atticus's daughter, Jean Louise Finch, also known as Scout, travels back home to Macomb, Alabama. She discovers, to her great disappointment, that her father, Atticus, is a racist. He's a member of the Citizens Council, an organization that opposes desegregation. He opposes the work of the NAACP. He's attended a meeting of the KKK. How should we react to all this? Does Watchmen really tell us that Atticus was a racist? If so, does that mean that we have to stop idolizing him? Or can we instead still praise him for his willingness to defend Tom Robinson? There's an even more radical alternative, too. If we're not happy with Atticus the racist, can we just reject the new book altogether, instead holding on to our older understanding of Atticus, the Atticus we grew up with, the one who seemed like a model of racial justice? I'm Alex Racy, and here with me, as always, is John Farrell. Hey, John.
Hello.
How you doing?
I'm well.
It's been a while since our last podcast.
It has.
Any news since then?
Well, I mean, I was thinking of the weather today, which is extremely humid.
Right.
And hot, and it might be the kind of weather you would encounter in Macomb, Alabama. I hope when you edit the podcast, you will provide music that will be suitable to the subject.
Something Southern Gothic, gloomy. Yes. You know, I had our podcast in mind this morning, not only because we were going to record it today, but because there's a lot of soccer going on this summer, and our first podcast was about soccer.
Yes.
And then that led me to think about the fact that our next podcast will be our 10th, and I think you and I have agreed that we're going to call 10 podcasts a season, which is a pretty short season, but a lot of what they call premium TV these days. The shows only have 10 episodes, so
yes.
We're piggybacking on that, and that's going to be the season. But that also means we need a season finale. So what is the topic for the last podcast? It has to be something really good. Maybe we'll get lucky and someone listening will write in and tell us what they want to be the final podcast.
Yes.
I am afraid that somebody will suggest Donald Trump. This is the summer of Donald Trump, and you and I have studiously avoided talking about Donald Trump.
Well, that would be an appropriate season finale.
Because
Trump is the season.
He's a gravitational vortex of conversation. It's hard to talk about anything without eventually mentioning Trump, as we're proving right here.
I resisted talking about Trump, but I'm willing to go for it.
Yeah. It's hard to say anything about Trump that hasn't already been said.
Well, we haven't said it yet.
That's right. That's right. And that's the important thing, that we said it.
That's right.
Well, let's get talking about Mockingbird. The first thing I have to cop to is the fact that I read some of the reviews and commentary on the latest novel, Go Set a Watchman. And other than that, I'm relying on my memory of To Kill a Mockingbird. But you were the one who did the hard work of going back and reading Mockingbird, rereading Mockingbird, and reading the new novel, Go Set a Watchman. So I want you to lay the groundwork for us. So all these reviews and all these critical articles, they say that the controversy arises because Atticus in the new novel, Watchman, is a racist. So we should just get it out of the way. Is that true? Do you think he comes across as a racist in the new book?
Yes. Yes. And Scout, who idolizes him in the first book, is horrified by his behavior and compares him to Hitler. So there's no doubt at all that he's a person that not only we would characterize as a racist, but that she does.
Right.
So in this local context, He's now racist, and in the way of thinking of the book, which I think I should probably explain, that in both books, there's a very definite sense of the hierarchy of society. At the top are the white, middle class, educated people, which is the class that obviously the main character and her father belong to. Then there's the black people who are their servants, and whom they know in a familiar way. And in general, the black people of the town. But then the lowest people in the town are the white trash, so-called.
Mm-hmm.
The poor white people. And there's no sense of sympathy for them in either book. Right? And in a sense, what's going on in Ghost Head of Watchmen is the horrifying fact that Atticus is now going over to the white trash. So that's another thing that horrifies Scout Jean Louise in Ghost Head of Watchmen. Their father is not only espousing views that she finds detestable, but he's associating with people that she finds detestable.
Right. And now, when you say that this is sort of the hierarchy that's portrayed in the books, do you mean that you get the sense this is what the author Harper Lee believed, or do you mean these are the views being expressed by the characters about the social hierarchy?
Both. Both. I don't think Harper Lee has any self-consciousness about portraying the lives of poor Southern whites as being utterly degraded and mean-spirited and drunken, etc.
Right. Now, to go back to Atticus for a second, you've agreed with the reviewers that he is a racist, but I guess I want to know exactly what kind of racist he is, so let's make at least one distinction here. So in the 50s, there were people who at least said, now I'm not sure this is what they really believed, in fact I think it's probably not, but at least openly what they would say is that they believed in equality for the races, but they wanted separation. So that's where you get the separate but equal slogan.
Yes.
And then there were people in the 50s who would have just openly said, no, races are still unequal. White people are intellectually or in some other way morally maybe superior. So is Atticus in the 1950s in Watchmen, is he a guy who's going around at least saying he believes in separate but equal? Or has he sort of outed himself as a guy who really believes in the superiority of white people to other people?
And what he commits himself to is the current superiority of white people.
Uh-huh.
That our black people have not developed. That community has not developed to the point where they're able to play the role that their numbers would make possible.
Right. So Atticus believes in principle that the races are equal, but he believes somehow, as a matter of cultural fact at that moment, there is a kind of superiority to white culture.
Yes. And there's no sense that he's an integrationist. That issue hardly even comes up.
Right.
Except as something that the NAACP might want to impose.
Now, there is also this mention in all the reviews of the fact that he's at least visited one meeting with the Ku Klux Klan. So does he embrace the ideology of the Klan, which goes way beyond the separation of races and segregation, right? I mean, the Klan is a sort of violent, murderous, terrorist organization. Has he gone over to that worldview?
No. But he's at a meeting where, you know, vile things are said, and he's countenancing them,
mm-hmm.
right? And you know, inside the book, there's a certain amount of hedging about why Atticus is doing what he does and what he really thinks. And his brother, and to some extent he himself, suggests that there's some strategy involved in his behavior, that he doesn't want things to go too far, that he doesn't want the poor elements or the KKK to be too influential. So he's keeping an eye on things, and that's why he would attend that kind of a meeting.
I see. So he is a committed segregationist, at least at this historical moment, but he's worried that we're going to go beyond segregation over to the violent ideology of the KKK or something, and he's trying to put a stop to that. Or
at least he says that.
Yeah.
But really, the explanatory motif that's in play in the book is that the change that has occurred in Atticus's character has very much to do with the fact that, unlike in the 30s, when the white people were just in charge, now the NAACP and the federal government are pressuring the South to change. And so they're resisting this. And that really explains why Atticus has a different attitude.
So he's reacting to the loss of power among his community and people like him,
yes.
And that's what has changed his views.
And even Scout understands that.
Mm-hmm.
And is ultimately willing to see that his behavior has more of a state's rights coloring to it than hostility towards people.
Did you, looking back on Mockingbird, feel that any of this was at least hinted at in that novel? Because there have been some people who've said that there is a body of scholarly literature, not one that was ever all that popular or well-known, that has been pushing for years the idea that Atticus in the original novel, Mockingbird, is really not the great guy we've all made him out to be. So when you reread Mockingbird, did you see more hints of Atticus's racism? Because talking now, you've described it as a change, as though he was almost a better man in the 30s than he is in the 50s.
I think he's utterly heroic in Mockingbird. Mm-hmm. And we're meant to admire him completely. We can guess about Atticus in the 1930s that he would not have advocated integration. But that issue just never comes up.
Right.
It's not mentioned.
So the Atticus we see in Mockingbird really is the angelic person we all remember, the utter hero.
Well, he's fighting against the prejudice of his community.
Yeah.
Right? And he's willing to put himself in danger to do that. And he even endangers his children. And the effectiveness of his heroism is partly based upon his refusal of violence. Right, he's a figure of masculine strength who doesn't need to intimidate other people. Right, that's the key to his nature. That he's self-sacrificing but not superior. He's humble in a way, and he's a great shot. In his youth, he was a great shot, but he doesn't have a gun anymore. He doesn't shoot things anymore.
Right,
he will not kill a mockingbird. Mm-hmm. Right, that's the point of the title. And there's one moment in the story when he's required to shoot. He has to kill a rabid dog.
Right. The town goes to get him, if I remember correctly, because he's the best shot in town.
Yes. And she sees him do it in a way that's utterly unsubconsciously skillful without being showy. So he really is a hero. And he teaches her that you can't understand other people unless you can put yourselves in their place. So he gives her really very strong advice, very good advice about how to treat other people. And fully respecting them. Now, where you can see that his attitudes would not be ones that we would feel comfortable with today is in situations where he'll say to her things like, anyone that would hurt a black person should be, and that's the lowest thing you can do. And of course, there's something right about that, naturally, but it seems to imply that the black people are vulnerable and couldn't protect themselves.
Right.
So it puts him he's just utterly naturally in a superior position.
Right. He's a paternalist toward the black community.
Yes.
Yeah.
And of course, and the people who would do that kind of thing are the white trash. So there's no subconsciousness about the rightness of this social order, mm-hmm. right? With the rich whites or respectable whites at the top, the blacks in the middle, and then the white trash, as the book would say, at the bottom.
Okay, well, with some background on the books out of the way, let's dive into one of the main controversies that has arisen since Watchmen was published. I think there are a lot of people who've read it, and they've, at least in their own mind, they've discovered that Atticus was a racist. And this has been very upsetting to them because they very much admired Atticus. There are stories of people who became attorneys because they admired Atticus. There are people who named their children Atticus. There were people who said that their fantasy spouse was always Atticus. And so one of the controversies has been, do we really need to accept this new picture we're getting in Watchmen, that Atticus is a racist? Does it have to influence the way we see the earlier book? And I think at least one complication in that issue is that it's not totally clear that these books are really about the exact same timeline and that one is really a prequel to the other, as opposed to being a revision of the other. So how did you feel reading the books about that issue?
We should point out that it's almost certain that the first, that Ghost Rider Watchmen was written before To Kill a Mockingbird.
Right.
And so when we talk about the new novel, really the new novel is To Kill a Mockingbird.
Right.
Right, and that's something you hardly know by reading the reviews and the discussions in the press.
Right, so let's clarify this for the listeners. So we have this funny situation where Harper Lee wrote Go Set a Watchman. That was her first novel. It's rejected by an editor who gives her a suggestion for another book. That book turns out to be To Kill a Mockingbird. So To Kill a Mockingbird is the second book that Harper Lee wrote, but the first that she published. And then this manuscript for Watchmen was sitting around for decades and decades and decades. And it's now the second one published. but the first one written. And to add an additional layer of complexity, it's also, within the narrative of the novel, it's second, because it's set in the 50s rather than the 30s.
Right.
Right. Do we have two works here in the same fictional world, or these are two different drafts of the same novel? What have we got?
Well, I was struck by the fact that Harper Lee did keep the same cast in play, and she really relied upon Ghost Rider Watchmen as a blueprint for the family composition. When in Ghost Rider Watchmen, Jean Louise goes home, she's very anxious to talk to Calpurnia, who is the black servant who raised her, really, along with her father.
Right.
And she's an important person in her background. One of the catastrophic things that happens to her is that Calpurnia no longer treats her like a family member, but treats her as someone who's on the other side of the racial divide.
Mm.
That bothers her a lot. So it's almost as if it had been set up for To Kill a Mockingbird. So she really went back and fleshed out that earlier host relationship. There was a blueprint, in a sense, there, and so there is some of the feeling of a prequel-sequel arrangement. But when Harper Lee decided to investigate the Tom Robinson trial, she realized that it made more sense for the character in Ghost Rider Watchmen to have heroically saved Tom Robinson in the past. And that was a good setup for his conversion to being a racist. Right? Whereas when she moved the story back to 1930, she realized it would be better for Atticus to lose the trial, to emphasize how much in advance he is of the people of that time. So she changed that fundamental thing.
Right. And so in that way, it's like these are not two stories about the same events, because in a certain way, the central event of Mockingbird, the trial, the outcome is changed in
Yes.
Watchmen.
Yes. But so they're not quite the same universe.
So one option for readers, right, is to just say, look, I find the Atticus in Watchmen to be disturbing, but this isn't even the same character, really, as the one we get in Mockingbird. And so maybe you just continue focusing as a reader on the Atticus of Mockingbird, if that's who you admire, and you treat Watchmen as a kind of discarded previous draft, which has now been published.
The trouble is that the Harper Lee who wrote Watchmen knew something that she didn't have an interest in reminding readers about in To Kill a Mockingbird, which is that people change. So ever admiring a hero as if their characters were absolutely fixed and would never be admirable, that is a mistake in a sense, right? It's the kind of thing that fiction allows us to do, though, right? Fiction allows us to present characters that we know fully and thoroughly as we never do in life.
Right.
Right. We have authoritative knowledge of character in fiction, which we never have in real life.
Right. So even if a reader were to set aside Watchmen and treat it as a kind of discarded first draft, the publication of Watchmen has reminded us all that the Atticus we get in Mockingbird is a kind of snapshot of a human being at a certain point in time, and we are reminded that that human being could change in the future.
Yes.
Which is something we didn't want to think about Atticus. We wanted to imagine for ourselves the rest of his life where he remains a great moral hero through and through.
And that's the beautiful thing about the words at the end. Right? that's all she wrote. She can't write anymore, at least for now. There's nothing more to be known about Atticus at the point when To Kill a Mockingbird ends.
Right. One other controversy I read about, which I found very interesting, is the question of whether readers are, so to speak, entitled to just reject part of an author's work or an artist's work. Here's a simple example of this. So George Lucas made 3 Star Wars movies in the 70s and 80s. People loved them enormously. Then he made some sequels to them. Well, he made some later movies, which were actually prequels to them. And many fans didn't like them. And there have been fans who've just said, well, we're going to pretend like those movies don't exist. And it's not just that the filmmaking was bad. They didn't like the events in those films. They don't want the events to be part of the what they call the Star Wars universe. And so certain fans just say, you know what, we're going to reject them and pretend like they don't exist. And there's an interesting question of whether fans are entitled to or even able to shape an author's fictional world in this way. Because we normally think it's the author who's in charge, right? If the author declares something about one of their characters, that's that. The author owns that fictional world. But it's interesting to ask yourself whether fans can, and at certain times at least, just say, we don't like what you've done, and we're not counting it. So, you know, they could be saying to Harper Lee, you think Atticus in the 50s is a racist? Well, my Atticus isn't a racist in the 50s, and so I'm going to grab part of what you wrote in Mockingbird, and I'm going to grab some stuff out of my own imagination, and that's who I think Atticus is, and just sort of override the author. I don't know whether that makes aesthetic sense, theoretical sense. I also don't even know whether it's psychologically possible, because as you mentioned, we now know certain things about Atticus from what Harper Lee told us, and it's not clear we can undo those psychologically and set them aside.
I think because fiction is always a contact with the author's mind, that it is psychologically difficult to separate things. And this is why it's sometimes not very pleasant to read the notebooks and early drafts of novels, where you find the characters that you came to really respect had origins that are shameful. But certainly we would not think that anyone is entitled to say, okay, so-and-so is a bad character in the book, but I prefer to read him as a good character.
Sure.
Right?
That's too much change.
You can't do that.
Right.
There's no doubt. But I think you can say, well, I like this book. And if you can just forget about the other stuff, you're not required to read the thing with a sense of wholehearted contact with the author's whole vision or something like that.
Yeah.
You're quite entitled to say that this was a good book and that was a bad book for me.
Right, and to read them in segments, essentially.
Yes.
I get these recommendations more than anything else with TV shows. I've had no small number of people say, you should watch this TV show, but stop in season whatever or with episode whatever and don't watch the rest because they want to shape a little piece of the fictional universe that's better than what the creators and artists put together in toto.
Faulkner wrote a set of little biographies of the characters in Sound and the Fury for the Viking portable Faulkner that was put together by Malcolm Cowley. And so he wrote these brilliant little vignettes of each one of the main characters in the book.
And this is information not in the book. This is additional biography.
Yes. And they're quite brilliant. And they add a lot to our understanding of a lot of the things that are happening in The Sound and the Fury. But the one about Caddy, who is in many ways the emotional center of the book, Faulkner decided that, this is during World War II, he decided that she'd never be heard from again until somebody spotted a newspaper photo with her in a gorgeous costume next to a Nazi general.
Oh, wow.
So this southern girl becomes a Nazi.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, it just seems to come from another world far beyond Faulkner and The Sound and the Fury and Yakima Toffa County and all of that. But it also just seems like such a violation of the emotional appeal of the character in The Sound and the Fury. It's a terrible mistake. And what can you say about that? To me, it was just a layer of Faulkner making a mistake. It's not really part of the book, in my view, because it's a different utterance and a different decision.
And I think these are the times when people feel most entitled to set aside an author's later works or additions, is when the later works and additions are not just bad, or we don't like them, but when they seem in some way incongruent with the earlier work. And you feel like the author made some sort of mistake in the way that he or she continued to create the fictional world which they created in earlier work.
Authors often have no idea when to die. You know, and if they had a better sense of that, or when to stop writing, they could create an aura of silence that would enhance their previous works,
right,
and create hunger, whereas they often cloy us with too much information.
All right, now that we've talked a little bit about whether or not Atticus is a racist and whether people are sort of compelled now to see not only the Atticus of Watchmen as a racist, but even the Atticus of Mockingbird as a racist, here's a question that I think people are facing as they're writing commentary about the new publication. Do we have to change our feeling that Atticus was a certain kind of moral hero? Because a lot of people admired Atticus. But is there a way to say that Atticus, even though he might be a racist, is still a certain kind of hero because even if he is a racist, he did defend Tom Robinson? Is he still someone we should admire and look up to, even if we now look up to him as a very flawed person? Or is this revelation that he's a segregationist or is going to become a segregationist, does that basically destroy our ability to see him as a hero at all?
I would say that it doesn't destroy that. You know, I think, first of all, the word racist is a large word, right? And it has many angles to it. There are different ways you can interpret it. And to me, calling somebody racist says something very deep about their motivation, as well as their opinions, and their social stance towards other people. So, in the story, Atticus is warm towards black people and idealistic about the law and willing to sacrifice that they get their rights and so on, and not be falsely accused of a crime and not be punished for a crime the character did not commit. So he has all of that, and so it's hard to say that's motivated by racism. And that's where Atticus really stands out.
So you think what we still admire about him is the fact that in his heart, he really sort of thinks of everyone as equal, wants to treat them as equals, doesn't want to segregate. And for you, his later 1950s segregationist self is based on some sort of, well, first of all, probably psychological pressure he's unaware of, which is that his social class is now under threat.
Yes.
And that leads him into some kind of distorted reasoning about how the black community is not ready now in the 50s to manage itself, but he remains hopeful that it will be in the future or something. And so your picture is that sort of deep down we have a good person who we can admire, and then there are these layers of flaws on top of that that don't change the fact that deep down he seems to love all people equally, something like that?
Well, those issues are not confronted in
right.
in To Kill a Mockingbird. So his motivation is he's acting according to his own ideals in a very thoroughgoing way, which is always admirable.
So for you, actually, I misrepresented your point of view. Really, it comes down to the fact that the Atticus we can admire for you is the Atticus from Mockingbird. We don't have to load in all the stuff from Watchmen. And what we see in Mockingbird is the good heart.
Yes.
And we don't really see anything else. So no. That's why we can still admire the Atticus of Mockingbird, because yes. He is just pretty much thoroughly admirable in that book.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, if Harper Lee were a great fiction writer, she would have been able to integrate the very admirable Atticus Finch of Mockingbird with the other theme that she was really interested in, which was, you know, can that person change? But she, you know, wasn't able to do that. We don't have the successful integration of the two halves of the story.
I guess I see it a little bit differently from the way you see it. So if we look at these and we think these books constitute a single fictional universe, and we now know that the Atticus in the 1930s of Mockingbird is going to become a much worse person in the 50s, or maybe even flaws he had in the 30s and already had in the 30s are going to manifest themselves in the 50s, then I think it's much harder to continue admiring him. And I think it's because, so look, it's not just that he has some flaws and some virtues. Everybody does. That's just a matter of being human. But I think when a person's flaws affect their virtues is when the two are related. What we admire in Atticus is this moral view that he's trying to teach to Jean Louise, where he says you've got to walk around in other people's shoes, treat them as you would want to be treated. But then we find out that maybe that very thing is in question, that he doesn't really believe that, because we, at least from the modern perspective, cannot believe that anyone who seriously tried to do that, to try to walk around in other people's shoes, could also defend segregation. And so it seems like Atticus's moral character, what we admired about it, is now in question. It's as though it wasn't really there in the way that we thought it was. And so that's why I think, at least the way I might read the books, I can never quite see Atticus the same way again.
Thank you.
Thank you.